Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harris, and it's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And the host and founder of the show is Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. Carol's on assignment this week, just getting back from a trip to Ireland, and she'll be reporting to us in coming weeks about her findings there in terms of health care for senior citizens and basically how the people she calls seasoned citizens get along in that beautiful European country. Today we have some very, very special content for you. I'll be talking with Ron Owens, who is a talk show host at KGO in San Francisco, about to celebrate his 40th anniversary at the station, which in radio is pretty rare. But more importantly, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease 13 years ago, but because it was progressing very slowly, he kept it private until only recently. Now he's facing an exotic new surgical procedure called deep brain stimulation in August, and he candidly discusses it with me, and we'll be sharing that conversation with you later in the program. Kicking it off, our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman is talking with a very, very celebrated figure, former President Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter has written a new book. It's titled A Full Life, Reflections at 90, and it's published by Simon & Schuster. And Carter describes it as follows. Reaching my 90th birthday is a good time to look back on moments that changed my life and reflect on some of the memories that are especially important to me. Some of these events affected me profoundly or taught me lessons large and small. Others are amusing, and some make me contemplate who I was at that time. There are some that I enjoyed and savor, and others that I wish had never happened or that I could change. And now we're proud to present Steve Wiseman in conversation with former President Jimmy Carter. President Carter, it's great to have you with us. What still drives you at age 90 to make the ever-ready bunny thinks he doesn't have energy?
Well, I have a good health so far. I've been lucky with that. I'm still as active as I was 40 years ago. The Carter Center has programs in 80 countries in the world, and we deal with negotiating peace agreements and holding elections, and we just finished our 100th election. We have a major health program. This coming year, we'll treat 71 million people for diseases that no longer are known in the developed world. So it's an exciting and challenging and unpredictable and I would say adventurous and gratifying life. So that's what keeps me going. And also my wife, my partner, Rosalind, with whom I've been married now for 69 years, is a very good ally of mine and a good advisor and a good partner. So all in all, I have a very good life still.
You know, I was interested to see in your book, we're talking about your wife, Rosalind, they said that, and you said that her political skills were perhaps even beyond yours. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on that.
Well, she really likes politics better than I do. You know, I just see a political campaign as a means to get me into an executive position so I can do things I want to do. But she really enjoys the political interrelationships. She likes the strategy, the planning. She likes the detailed analysis of how to deal with the public and also with news media. She likes the technique of raising money and so forth. She likes to make public speeches. All these kind of things, and some of them I like as well, but I would say that all in all, she's much more attuned toward the political environment than I am.
Great partnership. You know, speaking of campaigns, when you look at the vitriol of the campaigns of today and the negativity and the comments such as, well, we're hearing from some of the candidates, does it sadden you?
It does, and I would say that our political system has kind of gone down the drain in the last 15 to 20 years as far as moral integrity and idealism is concerned. It's primarily because of a stupid decision of a Supreme Court in Citizens United where they ordained that a corporation had the same privileges or status as a human being. in a citizen, and it's almost an unlimited amount of infusion of massive quantities of money into the political campaign. And this has created polarization as folks use as large sums of money to attack the integrity of their opponents. And it also subverts the political system because those people who give, say, $100,000 or more to a candidate, they want something out of it. Most of them do. They want to have a chance to have direct access to the president when he's in it, or he or she is in the White House or something like that. Or they want a special privilege on taxation or government largesse. And so it's really distorted the total political system. When I ran against Gerald Ford for president, and then later when I was challenged by Ronald Reagan, we didn't raise a single penny from any sort of contributor. We just used a $1 per person checkoff, and we didn't have enough money to have negative commercials and so forth. But now it's totally changed, and it's polarized our country. And it means that when people finally do get to Washington, either in the Congress or in the White House, they're alienated from people in the opposite party.
You know, one of my sayings is it's not as bad as you think, it's worse. And I'm a media law professor and constitutional law professor. And when we were studying that, one of the opinions, I think it was of Clarence Thomas, saying, well, the people will know who's contributing. Well, that's not true. The way the law is, these people corrupt the system, and then you don't even know who's sponsoring it.
That's exactly right. You know, with a political individual political organizations, they can put unlimited amounts of money in, and sometimes even the candidate doesn't know who's giving all the money. So it's and then a lot of the owners of these people, of these corporations, are foreigners. So it's just done a devastating blow, in my opinion, to the basic ability of citizens in this country all to be equal when they go to the polls to vote. The rich people have a much greater impact and a much greater influence after the election is over than they ever did before.
You know, the battle for racial equality is one that is always going on. And just recently we had South Carolina agreeing to take down the Confederate flag. You grew up in a very segregated South, but you were a tremendous leader for racial equality. And I believe, as you said in your book, your father was even a segregationist. Where did you get your sense of racial equality?
Well, I lived in a community called Archery that had about 200 black people, African Americans, and we were the only white family that had anybody my age. So all of my playmates and all of my counselors and my many stepmothers, you might say, were African Americans. So I grew up in a black culture to start with, and that was turned out to be ultimately a very good thing for me. My mother paid no attention to the racial distinctions that were prevalent in the South during those years. She was a registered nurse, and she had the privilege and the isolation and the impunity from criticism because she was a part of the medical profession. She was like a doctor in Archery, Georgia. And she nursed among the black people. She got to know them, love them, as I did. And so that was the foundation that I had, although I grew up in a community that still suffered from the racial discrimination of 100 years since the war between the states or Civil War was over. In 1865, it wasn't changed until the 1960s. So separate but equal was the law of the land. It was supported by the Supreme Court, the Congress, all of the lawyers and churches in the country basically supported that until it was changed. So I think when we did make that change in the 1960s and 70s, we kind of breathed a sigh of relief and said, well, we've now done away with racial discrimination or white supremacy. But lately, the news media have shown us in police dealing with black people and the horrible crimes that were committed, the murders that were committed in Charleston, South Carolina, that we still have a long way to go.
We do. One of the great stories I really loved in your book showing, you know, your state of mind was you were playing with young African-American friends, and then they stopped to let you go through a gate first, and you were wondering about that. That was just odd to you.
I was about 14 years old, and I was coming out of a field with two of my African-American friends, and to my surprise, they stopped to let me go first through a gate. And I figured, well, this must be a trick. They probably got a trip out of there, so I'll fall down or something. And I realized later that their parents had probably told them that the time had come for them to start deferring to me as a superior human being. Wow. Just because I was white. And it was a transforming experience in my life that I didn't realize how important it was until later. But that was just what went on in the South. We were so intimate, at least the farm families were so intimate with each other, working in the same field and playing with each other and fighting and wrestling with each other and playing baseball with each other and going hunting and fishing with each other. We didn't realize that there was a distinction between us until we reached a certain age. And that was about the time we went to that pasture gate.
You know, one of the other interesting things, a major influence in your life was another minority, a Jewish admiral, not that many, Hyman Rickover. And you've talked about how influential he was, and I also loved your story about your interview with him. Tell us about that.
Well, he was one of the greatest men I've ever met, and he transformed my life. I say, second only to my father, Admiral Hyman Rickover had the most impact on my life. When he interviewed me for one of the best top jobs in the Navy, that is to build an atomic submarine, at the very initiation of the program, I went in to be interviewed. Every young naval officer wanted this job. And I sat in front of Rickover in a chair that I later found out had the front two legs cut off, so I was almost always sliding off.
Love
he asked me question after question of increasing difficulty. Did he prove everything I thought I knew as an expert, I didn't know anything about it compared to him. And he finally asked me one final question. He said, how did you stand in your class at the Naval Academy? And I swelled out my chest with pride and said, so I said, I think 59 in a class of 850. And he asked me another question. He said, did you always do your best? And I started to say, yes, sir. And I realized there were many times at the Naval Academy when I didn't do the best I could. I was reading novels instead of studying and so forth. I won't go into detail about that. And I finally gulped a couple of times, and I said, no, sir, I didn't always do my best. And he looked at me with very cold and steely eyes, and he said, why not? And then he turned around. The interview was over, and I sat there for a couple of minutes not knowing what to do. And finally I got up and kind of stumbled out of the room. But maybe because I told him the truth that I didn't always do my best, accepted me as one of his chosen leaders in the early nuclear program. And
what
I think that why not the best, that question has made a profound impression on my life.
I remember you using that as a slogan early in your campaign. What made you decide to go into politics? Because you weren't someone at a young age who saw yourself becoming president of the United States. When did that seem like a possibility?
No, I never decided to run for public office until I was 38 years old. I had been a farmer for more than 15 years, growing peanuts and cotton corn and so forth. And I was the chairman of a Sumter County School Board. And at that time, the main candidate for governor of Georgia was a very good man. And he, his campaign, though, was no, not one. He would hold up one finger, and he would say, if one black child is admitted to a public school classroom in Georgia, we'll shut the whole public school system down. That was his threat and his claim. And I thought naively that that I would run for the state senate so I could help protect the public school system. So that's when I decided to run for office, just to accomplish one goal. And when I got to the Senate finally, that's all I asked for, was to be on the Education Committee. And so that was the beginning of my political life.
What was the best thing about being president?
Well, obviously, the best thing about being president was being able to keep my country at peace and to promote human rights. And while I was in office, we never dropped a bomb, we never launched a missile, we never fired a bullet. And I was able to promote human rights and freedom and peace all over the world as president. So I did some good things and tried a lot of others that didn't work out completely, as I described quite thoroughly in the book. But I think keeping the peace and promoting human rights were the two best things.
You know, one of the things, the economy is always such a huge issue in campaigns, but I wonder, does a president really have much control over the economy?
I would say the president has less than one-third of the control over the economy. One thing was, of course, the Federal Reserve Bank has a major control. The commerce and trade in our country has another part. The Congress has the right to pass laws on taxation. So I'd say the president has less than one-third of the influence over the economy.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you. The book is A Full Life, Reflections at 90. I hope the next 90 years are just as exciting, President Carter.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed being with you and the folks all over the country. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Visit our website at www.atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. It is important to address a personal emergency response system in your home in case of falls or injuries. AARP encourages their use for many older Americans to enhance independence and security, especially for those living alone. Many brands of PERS are available on the market, and seniors should consider their specific needs and budget before deciding on a system. The Federal Trade Commission provides free online information. One can get a system as basic as wearing a necklace or bracelet and push a button that will transmit to an installed response center through your landline telephone. In the event of an emergency with falls, chest pain, a suspected intruder, a press of the button will have a 911 ambulance dispatched to your home, even if you cannot reach your phone. PERS systems can be rented or purchased through local hospitals and are affordable and serviced by representatives. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and one of our senior correspondents, Kevin Casey, is also the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, and occasionally joins us to talk about what's going on in the talk radio industry, which is covered by Talkers magazine. And, Kevin, this week was the birthday of a very celebrated, and I say that from the standpoint of the definition of the word celebrity, a celebrated American. July 12th was the birthday of Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
And I think Jimmy J.J. Walker, the well-known comic who has been out there talking about this subject, I think he described Bill Cosby as the O.J. Simpson of comedy.
Oh, geez.
And I do not remember any... Well, I guess if I really think about it, you never know, because scandal is such a part of our culture.
Mm.
But I don't remember of anybody falling from grace, a celebrity who was so well-liked, falling to the rock bottom of being a public pariah, as has happened with Cosby, especially since the revelation came that he did at one point, thinking that it was going to be kept secret, admit that he had purchased drugs for the sake of
having sex with women. Now, even people that have supported him have come out against him. Is this a big topic this week on talk radio?
Yeah, it's been a very big topic, actually, over the last couple of weeks. It came back into people's minds with the revelation that you just mentioned. But it is huge. I think you're absolutely right, because you're talking about it. There's certainly been celebrities who have fallen from grace. But for someone who was so loved for so long by so many, and it seems like a strange fall, you know?
Very strange. And there's such a disconnect. I almost wonder whether or not Cosby has his own denial about this. His wife, who has been his manager for years, says that she knew he was not true to her in terms of fidelity.
Right.
But she's come out saying that these women knew that it was for sex and it was consensual. So there's a strange denial there. But I just get the feeling
there is,
that...
Don't forget about that. Just I want to interrupt you, but don't forget, a number of the women did say that they willingly and knowingly took the Quaaludes.
But they didn't. Well, yeah. Again, I don't want to get too deep into areas that I'm not, don't have firsthand knowledge.
Yeah, at least two people have said that they willingly, knowingly took them. So the question then, I guess, becomes, well, here, I just tell you what I think. What's going on in Bill Cosby's mind? How does one rationalize this, justify it, deal with it, whatever? I think a lot of guys who do this sort of thing simply fall back on the notion in their own minds that it's a he said, she said thing, and they don't really feel they're ever going to get truly caught.
Not get caught in arrogance, as opposed to deeper psychosis of thinking it's an entitlement.
Yes.
And that's what I'm sort of scratching at the surface of, that this might be a deeper psychological issue with Cosby. You know, when people lie to you, sometimes they tell lies to themselves and then tell you what they think is the truth. And that's the toughest kind of lie to catch. They could pass a polygraph. I thank you for your comments. That's Kevin Casey, our senior correspondent. He is the executive editor. He is the vice president of Talkers Magazine. You can find out everything going on behind the scenes in talk radio at talkers.com. I'm Michael Harris, and A Touch of Grey continues in a moment. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a roundtable of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. But and so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marks more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Grey, and I became involved with it along the way, is something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation, meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and
abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also, there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Coming up now, a conversation with a radio talk show host who is going to be facing a form of surgery that is very experimental and extremely fascinating. His name is Ron Owens. He's about to celebrate his 40th anniversary as one of the leading radio talk show hosts in America. 40th anniversary on KGO in San Francisco, a big station with lots of history. He also has been suffering from Parkinson's disease, and it's been 13 years now since he was diagnosed, but it's only been a few months since he announced it on the air. It's reached the point now where he has to do something about it, and he's opted to undergo this August a very experimental form of surgery called deep brain stimulation, and he and I had a chance to talk about it. DBS, deep brain stimulation. Could you share what that means?
Okay, what August 6th is when I'm going to have the operation, the surgery. And what they're going to do is basically, literally, drill two holes in my head. Why do they do that? They do that because they're going to insert, they're very soft, so you don't want to call them wires, but they insert like these very thin, wonderful wires, and they thread the left and the right side. When they're done with that, and that takes 4 to 6 hours, when they're done with that, they tie me up, zip me down to wherever intensive care is, and they stop at that point. And the reason they don't do the whole thing is because you've got to be sure that my body accepts it. You're putting wires into my body, and there are times 5% is the number I hear where there's a problem and they have to redo it, and you hope that's not going to happen, but you find out in that period. So then 3 weeks after the actual surgery, I go back in, but this is only for about 45 minutes. They open me up, and they put in, the best way to explain it, it's like a pacemaker for the brain. Mm. And they put that in under my clavicle. So you don't see it, you don't really feel it. And it's there. But then that's not it. They want to wait a few weeks to make sure my body doesn't have a problem with having this pacemaker kind of thing in it. And if the answer is no problem, then they turn it on. And then all they have to do is fine-tune. And supposedly I get back 5 to 10 years, or as my daughter said, party like it's 2005.
Get back, meaning it'll push the effects of the disease back to where it was 5 or 10 years ago?
Precisely.
That's a wonderful thing.
It's an incredible thing.
And this has been a procedure that has been, is it still experimental, or is it, has it been?
Well, the way I'm doing it is more experimental. The classic way that they do it is called awake. And what that is obviously you have the anesthesia, and then somewhere like in the middle of the surgery, they kind of wake you up, and you're kind of in a twilight situation, and they have like a cage around your head. And the reason they do that is they want to see, is this the right place? Is this the right place? They want to make sure that any insertion they make is exactly where it's supposed to be. Now, that has been the standard. Then you get your battery, and every day you got 45 minutes where you've got to charge the battery. But again, it helps you tremendously with the Parkinson's. This, what I'm doing, is called asleep, which I think anybody, as the doctor would laugh and say, anybody with a brain would go for that. I go in, they shoot me up, and instead of doing it, checking it with the brain itself, there's some kind of an MRI way of doing it that they can actually find out all the right and wrong places without my even feeling anything. So you got to trust the doctors, but one of the things is one of the doctors that's going to be my surgeon is the guy who invented the asleep. So I think we can pretty much trust him.
Did you go through a long process of consideration?
Yes.
In this?
I know. I always felt that I was going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The big process of thinking about it was when.
And I assume.
And this was definitely the right time.
Yeah. In other words, the Parkinson's has progressed to a point now where you're ready to do this.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I have to tell you, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, you realize the good that you can do in terms of inspiring and educating because of your platform and the fact that you're a unique individual in this situation. It's got to give you a certain sense of mission and a certain sense of satisfaction in the midst of all of this crisis.
Oh, it totally does. It totally does. But, you know, I'm still me. I make jokes about it. I don't dwell on it. You, I'm sure, remember the wonderful, wonderful talk show host, and he was also a news anchor, Pete Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete went in for knee surgery and died on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going in for surgery, and I'm making sure people know if I die on the table, you don't really want to be the third talk show host that wants to do this.
Mm.
I mean, that's the kind of humor I have. It's macabre. It's a way of dealing with it. But I can honestly say I haven't had one iota of doubt as to whether I was going to do it. I haven't had one thought that it's not going to work. I've just been looking forward to doing it and can't wait for the results.
That's legendary talk show host Ron Owens of KGO in San Francisco, and we certainly do wish him well. I applaud his bravery, and he has had a fantastic career, and still hopefully it'll continue after the surgery. I want to mention this was part of a much longer conversation. If you're interested in hearing it, my podcast is posted. I have a podcast called Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison, and you can hear the entire Ron Owens conversation at www.upcloseandfarout.com. That's upcloseandfarout.com if you would like to hear the entire conversation with Ron Owens. Coming up next, we're going to revisit Pluto and one of the scientists involved in the amazing New Horizons mission that took place this week, the flyby of Pluto. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. It is important to address a personal emergency response system in your home in case of falls or injuries. AARP encourages their use for many older Americans to enhance independence and security, especially for those living alone. Many brands of PERS are available on the market, and seniors should consider their specific needs and budget before deciding on a system. The Federal Trade Commission provides free online information. One can get a system as basic as wearing a necklace or bracelet and push a button that will transmit to an installed response center through your landline telephone. In the event of an emergency with falls, chest pain, a suspected intruder, a press of the button will have a 911 ambulance dispatched to your home, even if you cannot reach your phone. PERS systems can be rented or purchased through local hospitals and are affordable and serviced by representatives. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy. You feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Several weeks ago, I think you heard it first here, we had Dr. Alan Stern, the chief investigator for the New Horizons project that's been in the news this week, with the flyby of Pluto and some very interesting photos being sent back to Earth. We spoke to him several weeks ago as New Horizons was heading toward the Pluto system, and it was a fascinating conversation. You can check it out at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. But right now, just looking back, let's re-listen to one segment of that conversation with Dr. Alan Stern at the New Horizons headquarters, talking about the state of science in general and the different points of view that exist among scientists in that community. Is there a lot more diversity and points of view in the scientific community than that which we see watching specials on the Discovery Channel? I mean, one would get the feeling, being a fan of science, not a real insider, but an outside fan of science, that every single scientist, whether they're an astronomer or a planetary scientists, they all march to the beat of the same drum. They tell the same story. And I've got to think there's more to it than that. What's your take on that?
Well, actually, science is a very competitive business. Different ideas compete. And, you know, we use data and computer modeling and other techniques to test those ideas and determine which ones are best. And so the scientific debate is typically fierce and sometimes ferocious. There are wide varieties of opinions until things get settled. You know, used to debate about continental drift, for example. They debated from turn of the century, 110, 115 years ago, for decades, until the proof, the data became so overwhelming that no one could deny it. And I could make many other examples of that in space science, in biology, in studies of the Earth, geophysics, geochemistry, all that. But so it is a kind of rough and tumble business, and we like it that way. And sometimes on television, it's portrayed as sort of open and shut. It's really a little messier than that until we get to where we get consensus. And that's the best way to proceed, really, in the scientific enterprises, to debate, well, how about this and how about that, and I've got this new data, and it means this or it means that, until we see our way clearly to something we can settle on. And, you know, in planetary science, we're seeing this great new diversity of planets, not just like the small planets in our solar system, but planets around other stars that are nothing like the planets in our home solar system. We see Jupiters that are closer to their star than Mercury is, a little rocky planet. And we see moons that look like Earth. And we see planets around pulsars. Who would have ordered that? And we're accepting of that diversity because it's just new data that the universe is a wonderful place and it makes a lot of different kinds of planets. The Earth seems to be a strange and very unusual place. And I think that makes a lot of us feel more special about the Earth.
Of course, with the enormous numbers, even if something is special and rare, the odds are it isn't that special and that rare. So maybe there will only be 2 billion Earths as opposed to 100 billion Earths out there.
That's right. That's right. There are trillions of stars in the universe. We now pretty sure that most every star forms planets. Even if the Earth is a 1 in 1,000, that means there are billions. So it may be rare in a census sense, but there are going to be a lot of Earth-like planets according to that simple arithmetic.
Right, Dr. Stern, we have 2 more minutes left. People like you fascinate me. I know that you have been quoted as saying that young people should go into science, that it's fun, and that you'll always enjoy what you do. What are your personal philosophies about where the human race is going as we enter this new age?
Well, I'm personally very optimistic. Some things aren't so great, but a lot of things really are. People are living longer. We're living better lives than our forefathers and our ancestors. We're learning about the universe and becoming a spacefaring species. We're communicating better than we ever could thanks to things like the Internet. I'm very optimistic about technology. Even you just take driverless cars that will come online in the coming years. I think that will put an end to drunk driving accidents. Probably put an end to the dilemma that a lot of older people have, that they don't want to lose their freedom, but they're not able to drive anymore. I just think that the future is very bright, and I look forward to inventions that we can't even predict, much less the ones we can.
Well, if you're able to drive this car so many miles away within the orbit of the innermost moon and then do a course correction, I would think we should be able to invent very safe driverless cars here on Earth in short time. And all that kind of stuff is connected. Dr. Stern, I appreciate your time, and I envy you for having such a wonderful job that has so much meaning.
Well, thank you very much. This is a pleasure, and thanks for your interest.
Thank you. Wow, that was great. I really enjoyed talking to Dr. Alan Stern. We had him on before he was everywhere. I got an early jump on that, although the New Horizons project has been going on for almost 10 years. What a long haul in terms of a great team of very, very bright scientists pulling this off. And, of course, what you just heard was conducted as part of a larger conversation a number of weeks ago. And it all worked out very well this week. The New Horizons craft, the unit, zoomed past the planet Pluto and its moon Charon and all the other moons in the Pluto system at the speed of something like 8 miles a second, which is faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive. Can you imagine 8 miles a second? Ping! Of course, there's no sound in space, so it just goes very quietly along. You can't even tell it's moving because you need to see it against other things to see the movement. That's all, you know, relativity at work. But 8 miles a second is something it's hard to comprehend. And now it's on its way into the Kuiper Belt. But we will be getting pictures in beautiful resolution, the scientists are saying, over the next months, for the rest of the year, because it takes a long time for the pixels to be transmitted and sent across space and then downloaded and then reproduced. So this is not going to be, you know, a complete payoff, instant gratification. But then again, it's going to be fun to see it. And that, of course, is very exciting and, you know, mind-expanding for the human race. So thank you, Dr. Alan Stern, for giving us an inside track on what's now one of the biggest scientific stories in the world. I'm Michael Harrison. We're going to be joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who's going to talk about grandparent scams and what to watch out for. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at premiergeriatricrn.com.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with 4 legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. Our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed them very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
We tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com. You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is one of the nation's leading experts on scams and fraud and identity theft. He's the author of books such as The Truth About Avoiding Scams and Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall. His website is titled scamicide.com. Steve is here now to talk about obituary scams. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, scammers have no sympathy for anyone, as evidenced by the many scams that are based on obituaries. For years, scammers would scan the obituaries and go to Social Security's Death Master File, where the names of deceased Americans are available along with their Social Security numbers, and then use that information on the deceased in order to make them a victim of identity theft by obtaining credit, filing phony income tax returns, or other tactics. Easy access by scammers to the Death Master File has been largely closed by legislation that took a long time to be made effective. Scammers also will look for information in obituaries about the names of family members and then use that information for purposes of the infamous grandparent scam, where the grandparent gets a telephone call late at night from a scammer posing as the grandchild, who under the guise of some emergency tricks the grandparent into sending money to the scammer. Another scam is scammers will call the families of people they see in obituaries and claim they're creditors of the deceased and that the family must pay a debt owed by the deceased. And then finally, scammers will also deliver packages by messengers or on a COD basis, claiming that the package was something ordered by the deceased. It's only after the family member has paid the cash on delivery charges and opened the package that the family finds the package is just filled with old newspapers or magazines, merely used as weight. Scammers prey on people at their most vulnerable, so it's at the times like the death of a family member that you really have to be your most vigilant. When writing an obituary, don't put in specific information, such as names that could be used by a scammer of children or grandchildren. Also, contact the three major credit reporting bureaus, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, to seal the credit report of the deceased in order to avoid the risk of identity theft. Because that way, even if someone gets the Social Security number and other information on the deceased, they're not going to be able to open credit. If someone contacts you claiming a debt that was owed by the deceased requires payment right now, demand written confirmation for you to review before paying any alleged debts. And don't be pressured. Don't be pressured to act quickly by a purported debt collector. Finally, if a COD package comes, refuse. Refuse to pay until you can confirm that the delivery is legitimate. You know, it's kind of a sad situation, but you have to recognize that these scammers truly have no sympathy, and the only place you're going to find that helping hand is at the end of your own arm.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman joins us every week here on A Touch of Gray. He's a senior correspondent on the show. He's also a prolific writer, a lawyer, and an expert on scams and fraud, as well as many of the topics we talk about. He's written Identity Theft Alert and The Truth About Avoiding Scams, both published by Prentice Hall, and his website. Check it out. It's very, very valuable. It's scamicide.com. Steve Wiseman. I'm Michael Harrison. I want to thank Dwayne Doobie Jr. on the front line, our producer, putting it all together. Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine for sharing some insights about the media. And, of course, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and a champion in the battle against ageism. And remember, no matter how many years you have, you know, on your odometer, no matter how many times you've taken that voyage around the sun, it's never too late to follow your dreams, to follow your passions, and to really enjoy your life to its fullest. Never too late at all. So get cracking at it. I'm Michael Harrison. Thank you for joining us. Join us again next weekend right here on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.